Book 7, Chapter 11, Gethsemane. In the light of the paschal moon, Jesus led his disciples from the city of shadows across the waters of Kidron to the darkness of Gethsemane. It was a familiar spot. When circumstances had made it difficult to reach Bethany, it had been their shelter for the night. But on this night it was different. The joy and confidence with which he had encouraged his disciples was ebbing as he looked back at the walled city with its flickering lights, concentrating for a moment upon its gates, and then pressed forward again towards the olive trees. He left most of his disciples on the fringe of the garden, and called his three beloved friends to follow him as he penetrated further among the trees. Finally he stopped. He spoke in a voice more troubled than they had ever known. "My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch." They saw him go forward about a stone's cast and throw himself suddenly down among the gnarled roots of the olive trees in an abandonment of grief and prayer. "Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me." We must ever look upon this prostrate form of our beloved Lord from the distance which separated him from his three disciples. We could not approach near if we would. Yet he desired his loved ones to witness the price he paid, that they might learn as much as the human heart can stand and the human mind conceive. That learning this, they might love more fervently, and loving, be his disciples indeed, bound to him by the fellowship of his sufferings. With sad and reverent hearts, we seek the cause of this desolation of spirit. Fear of death, even the excruciating death he knew awaited him, was surely not a prominent factor. The one who touched the leper's scaly flesh, who stood on the bulwarks of the storm-tossed boat, who fearlessly faced enemies armed to kill him, did not fear the wrath of man. There was little that was physical in his human cry for release from the cup that was now pressed to his lips. It was mental and spiritual. The Psalms which reveal so faithfully the Spirit of Jesus lead us unto Gethsemane. Let us go there now, and turning our eyes from the dejected form, read the words of Psalm 69. "Save me, O God, for the waters are come into my soul. I sink in deep mire, where there is no standing. I am come into deep waters, where the floods overflow me. I am weary with my crying, my throat is dried. My eyes fail while I wait for my God. They that hate me without a cause are more than the hairs of my head. They that would cut me off, being mine enemies wrongfully, are mighty. Then I restored that which I took not away. Because for thy sake I have borne reproach, shame hath covered my face. I am become a stranger unto my brethren, an alien unto my mother's children. But as for me, my prayer is unto thee, O Lord, in an acceptable time. O God, in the multitude of thy mercy, answer me in the truth of thy salvation. Deliver me out of the mire, and let me not sink. Let me be delivered from them that hate me, and out of the deep waters. Let not the water flood overwhelm me. Neither let the deep swallow me up, and let not the pit shut her mouth upon me. Answer me, O Lord, for thy loving kindness is good. According to the multitude of thy tender mercies, turn thou unto me, and hide not thy face from thy servant, for I am in distress. Answer me speedily. Reproach hath broken my heart, and I am full of heaviness. And I looked for some to take pity, but there was none, and for comforters, but I found none." We lift our eyes from the page, look again at the bowed form in the fitful light, and enter a little further into that dreadful hour. There are those who point out the increased sensitiveness of Christ to physical suffering, but have we realized his sensitiveness to sin? He lived in the presence of his Father, in an atmosphere of holiness and light. He went down to the shame and ignominy of a criminal's death. His pure mind had to face all the degradation of mockery, exposure, and crucifixion. He was made sin for us, who knew no sin. And because he was bearing the sin of the world and accepting the curse of the tree, he must be alone, forsaken not only by the people he had come to save, not only by those who were about to leave him and flee, but above all by the one from the light of whose countenance he had never departed. He knew that terrible cry of Psalm 22 would be wrung from his lonely, aching heart. Already the horror of great darkness was upon him. The Lord was laying upon him the iniquity of us all. Bearing iniquity was a desolating experience. It was here, not on the morrow in Jerusalem, that our Savior was undergoing the ordeal of his trial. All that happened to him afterwards would be physical. This was his hour. This was his victory. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. After a timeless interval, he rose to his feet and groped his way towards his friends. But weariness had triumphed over their love. They had slept as the dreadful conflict swayed between life and death. He had been alone indeed. There had been no human hand to grip, no eye to witness, no heart to share the agony of his loneliness. Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Yet, even in the darkness of that hour, with the hurt tearing into his soul, his thought was for them. Watch ye, and pray that ye enter not into temptation. For a fleeting moment his features relaxed as he saw their tired, pitiable faces looking stupidly up at his. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. And then he left them once more, and the conflict was renewed in all its agony. Sweat formed on his brow and fell like drops of blood to the ground. Once more the cry of submission answered the call for release. The conflict went on. The disciples were still asleep when he reached them. For the third time he joined issue with the protesting forces of his will. This time he found he was not alone. An angel of God stood with him, and with the angel the vision of the glory which was to be accomplished. He found new strength in the presence of the heavenly messenger, and with his final victory came a peace which did not desert him until the last moments on the cross. The conflict was over. Jesus went back to his exhausted disciples. All the trouble and pain had gone from his voice, but they were too tired to notice. Sleep on now and take your rest. It is enough. The hour is come. Behold, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hand of sinners. We can see him looking down at the sleeping men. He knew that their Gethsemane would come tomorrow. Terror, sorrow, and dreadful remorse. But they would emerge, and their love would take hold of his once more, and they would never forget. Lights flickered among the trees of the garden. There was the sound of men's feet, and an occasional oath rose above the muffled background of voices. Jesus woke his disciples for the last time. "Rise up, let us go. He that betrayeth me is at hand." They met in the garden, two companies, Jesus with his 11 disciples, Judas with the temple soldiers. The leaping flames of the torches give an atmosphere of unreality to the scene, casting unfamiliar shadows on familiar faces. But the features of Judas were unmistakable. The veneer had gone. The concentrated evil remained. He came forward to perpetrate his final and unforgivable outrage. "Hail, Master," he cried, and kissed him. With more grace than we can find in our hearts at the memory of it, Jesus spoke to him, "Friend, wherefore art thou come? Betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss?" Before Judas could answer, Jesus turned to the men who had come with him. "Whom seek ye?" "Jesus of Nazareth," was the reply. "I am he," Jesus answered simply. But the effect was dramatic. Awed by his majesty and his purity, they drew back and fell to the ground. Such was his command over his enemies. He kept it to the end. Through the hours of questioning, the indignities, the final torture, he was always their master. His victory over himself had been won. Now he could triumph over the wickedness of man. But his victories were on his own battlefield, not on theirs. They would win their own hollow conquests. He was seized by rough hands. His thoughts turned to his disciples. "Let these go their way," he commanded, and no man turned to hinder them. But Peter, his love and anger surging to the surface, took the sword, which earlier his Lord had treated with contempt, and raising it aloft, brought it down with murderous intent. The wild blow succeeded only in severing the ear of the high priest's servant. Immediately Jesus stepped forward and freed himself from his bonds to perform his last miracle of healing. This was not the allegiance he desired. "Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword." He had come to bring deliverance, not to seek it. Peter had seen a moment before what power Christ wielded over these men if he chose to use it. That power could instantly be supplemented by 12 legions of angels. Once more Jesus addressed himself to his captors. Why this darkness and treachery? Each day during the Passover week he had been in their midst. They knew the answer. His arrest had been contrived to outwit the people, particularly those who came from the hills of Galilee. It had to be done secretly and urgently. Even now Caiaphas was waiting impatiently in the city. They moved forward with him tied with cords in their midst. The disciples saw it. They realized he was going to submit. His death was inevitable. The kingdom was not to be. Their courage evaporated. Fear gripped them. With a last searching look, they turned and fled from the garden, stumbling over the loose boulders of Olivet, and left him alone with his enemies.